From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is BDGA Radio News.
And welcome. It is the Disc Golf News for the week of August 29, 2005. I'm Brian Sullivan. Before we get into the show, we just wanted to let all of our friends in the southern U.S. states who have been suffering through Hurricane Katrina that you are all in our thoughts this week. We hope you, your families, your homes, and of course your disc golf courses have all weathered the storm safely. Coming up on the show this time, our old pal, Dr. Betsy Schoenfeldt, the sports psychologist extraordinaire, is back to help you shape up your practice. We're going to dissect and rebuild your practice routine until you are a disc golf monster.
Frequently what we'll see is someone will have a correction made by a pro, and they'll go out and start to play, and they find, well, I'm playing worse than I was before, and they'll stop with the newly learned skill, the proper technique, and they'll rely back on the old habit that really just doesn't work as well.
Plus, can you take advantage of a tailwind? You can if you listen to our show. Des Redding is here, Women's World Champ. She's going to help you out with those tailwinds in the 60-second clinic. And prepare for the pain of the woodshed and the whipping post. Pros and abs alike are headed to Paw Paw, West Virginia this weekend for the West Virginia Open Super Tour event. We've got a preview of that for you. It's all on the way on this edition of PDGA Radio News, brought to you by GottaGoGottaThrow.com. Also, discovering the world at DTWorld.com. Discraft at Discraft.com. No Obstacles Disc Golf at PLU-ENT.com. And Innova Champion Disc, InnovaDisc.com.
The Champion Sidewinder from Innova is the latest addition to the state-of-the-art Champion line. The Sidewinder is designed for long turnover shots and long-distance rollers. The extra-long glide will add D to your drive no matter how big your arm is. And the Sidewinder is made with Champion line plastic, so it holds up round after round. Your game just got better with the new Sidewinder from Innova, number one in disc golf.
Time now for the 60-second clinic. So folks in the southern U.S. this week, specifically Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, they were headed north, trying to get out of the way of Hurricane Katrina. Well, can you imagine how far a disc would go with a 145-mile-an-hour tailwind? Yikes. Well, typically tailwinds aren't quite that gusty, but you can take advantage of them, as is pointed out this week by Women's World Champ Des Redding.
A tailwind will usually affect the drive with a series of air bounces. You can actually get a lot more distance if you can get it up just enough. It's a very finicky line, and it's hard to really read to see what is going to be the right distance of height on the drive that you need to get. But basic things, when you do have a tailwind on your drive, you want to make sure that you have it up enough so it's able to ride that wind current and create the entire flight path. Likewise, when you have a headwind, you want to keep it a little bit lower so it doesn't actually lift up and get carried away. But the tailwind, it'll create you a lot more distance if you can control your disc and not overextend. You have a tendency to want to throw really hard with a tailwind and ride out for all it's worth, and mostly it might just roll over and then get smashed down by that tailwind.
Des Redding won her second women's world title this year at the Pro World Championships, and you're listening to PDGA Radio News.
When you think disc golf, think No Obstacles. No Obstacles Disc Golf is found at www.plu-ent.com. Find information about No Obstacles events, like the Discraft Michigan Disc Golf Series stops at Boyne Mountain and Boyne City, and the Shanty Creek Throwdown. Quality events, quality disc golf products, and outstanding service. When you think disc golf, think No Obstacles at plu-ent.com.
Hi, this is Ken Climo. You're listening to PDGA Radio News.
In the big picture this week, Dr. Betsy Schoenfeldt is a sports psychologist at Western Kentucky University. She joins us on occasion to talk about the mental game. This week we'll tackle the topic of practice. How is your practice routine, and can we improve it? After you listen to this week's show, my guess is the answer will be yes.
Dr. Betsy, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Brian. It's always good to be here.
You're going to talk to us today about practice, and I want to begin with a quote from 1999 world champ Ron Russell, and he once told me, if you're practicing using a bad technique, you're essentially practicing for failure. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I agree entirely with that. It's really repetition that leads to skill performance. But if we're practicing poor technique, then we're repeating mistakes in our technique. And this may lead to a well-learned technique, but it's going to be a well-learned poor technique and not a highly skilled performance. So it's really important to have the proper technique. And for most people, this may mean working with a pro initially to ensure that they are practicing proper technique.
So before we even begin to practice, we have to first figure out what the best practice technique is.
Exactly.
We sit down with a local pro, spend some time with them, and they teach us some proper techniques, say for driving or for putting. So what are some of your guidelines for better practice?
Well, I'm going to go back to our last session, Brian. That was on goal setting. We need to plan our practice to make it an effective practice session. So we need to think about what we want to accomplish in each practice session. And again, what we talked about in the goal setting, let's start with the outcome that we want to get out of this practice session. Do we want to improve our putting? Do we want to improve our driving? And then talk about the process that we're going to follow. What are the practice drills that we're going to follow for whatever skill or skills it is that we want to work on in that session? Then keep a record of what you did during that session. If you're practicing your driving, how many fairways did you hit? How many greens in regulation? If you're practicing your putting, how many two putts or three putts or one putts did you have? That feedback, that's like the feedback that we talked about with the goal setting. That gives us very important information to let us know what we need to do in our future practices. What went well? What do we need to work more on? And we can also make some comments like, it felt good when I used this grip, or this grip seemed to be particularly effective. That also will give us that feedback to help us know what is working for us and what's not.
So if I'm keeping a record of my practice, let's say I'm working on putts from 30 feet, and five practice sessions ago I was hitting 3 out of 10, and now I'm hitting 7 out of 10. So what do I infer from the records that I'm keeping as far as what I'm doing right and what I'm doing wrong?
Well, again, there we're talking about some outcome feedback. We know that you are getting better because you've gone from 3 to 7. So you might also want to do some process feedback as well. You know, when you're hitting those 7 putts, what is it you're doing differently from when you're hitting the putts that are not making it? Is it a matter of focus? Is it aiming? Is it stance? Again, you may need to check with your pro. It's sometimes good to go back to that pro and say, okay, I've been working on putting. I'm getting better, but I still feel like something's not quite right, and get some additional feedback there as well. So we look at the outcome to kind of tell us if it's working or not, but we're going to have to look at the execution, the actual behavior we're engaging in, to determine what is working and what's not working. We might be able to provide that feedback for ourselves, or we might need to get some help from a pro. If you've got a friend that can go out with you and videotape you, then maybe you can watch your own videotape and figure it out yourself.
So if I'm keeping track of what I'm doing, I'm setting goals for my practice, how should I practice? Should I have a routine, or how should it go?
Well, when you practice, you really want to practice like you play. It's sometimes easy to say, oh, I'll go out and practice a little bit, and you're not really concentrating, not really giving it your best effort. But we really want to practice like we play. Focus, try to perform your best, use your shot routine. That way, your body learns the proper technique, and you're really getting the most out of your practice. Because not only do you want to practice like you play, you're likely to play like you practice.
Sometimes when we're in a tournament situation, you've got, say bad weather, it's raining hard. Is it really going to help me, do you think, to go to the inconvenience of practicing in, say, the rain or other bad weather?
That's a great question, Brian. Yeah, really, you do want to practice under a variety of conditions. Unless you're always going to play in the best weather and you're always going to throw the disc exactly where you want it to land, you need to practice in a variety of weather conditions, from a variety of lies, from behind trees, blind throws, if that ever happens to you out on the course, so that you learn to deal with these conditions as part of the game itself. The more you practice, the more comfortable you're going to be in a competitive situation when that comes up.
Break it down for us. What really is practice? What are we going through physically and mentally?
Well, when we learn a motor skill like disc golf, we actually go through three stages. They're called the verbal, the procedural, and the autonomous stage. The first stage is when we're essentially just talking ourselves through the skill. It requires our full attention. We're thinking, okay, I need to hold the disc like this, then I'm going to take my arm and pull it back like this and release at this point, and so forth and so on. So that's at the very early stage of learning a skill. As we practice, the repetition of practice moves us to the procedural stage where we go from knowing what to do to knowing how to do it. So I don't even have to think about the grip or the stance. That just comes naturally because the repetition has helped me learn that procedure without giving it any thought. So we want to continue that repetition, and it will move us into the third stage, the autonomous stage. We actually say that the performance becomes automated, and that's when we don't really have to think about it. We think more about, okay, this is the condition, this is the strategy, this is what I want this particular shot to do, and you step up and you execute. You don't want to think about the procedure at that point. If you're thinking about, is my grip correct? Do I have the proper stance at that stage of the game? Then you're probably actually going to disrupt your performance. The repetition from practice results in the automated performance. This means that we're able to perform the skill more efficiently, more quickly, and more accurately. That is, provided our practice has been accurate, going back to our first point in this conversation. And what we also find is that automated performance is less susceptible to the effects of fatigue and stress. It's the response that occurs whether we're thinking about it or not. And so this is why it's so important that we do practice to the point of automation. We want that proper technique to be the response that dominates whether we're rested or fatigued, whether we're relaxed or stressed.
Let me ask you this. I've decided I want to take your advice. I want to learn better practice. But unfortunately for me, I learned disc golf without the help of an experienced player. So as a result, let's say I don't have a good follow-through. How do I break that bad habit and start learning the proper skills and techniques?
Okay, to break that habit, Brian, you're going to have to go back to the pro and find out what the proper technique is for your follow-through. Then you want to practice the proper technique. It's the repetition that will establish it as the automated dominant response. But a couple of things are likely to happen when you go in to correct that follow-through. One is you'll probably see a decrement in your performance overall. When we're changing a bad habit, when we're changing the execution of a skill, we move ourselves back into that procedural stage, maybe all the way back to the autonomous stage, where we're talking ourselves through it, or we're still thinking about, how do I do this? So you're going to see a decrease in your performance, but you eventually should see an overall increase as you repeat the new correct skill, the correct execution of the skill. You'll move yourself through those stages again and get back to the automated stage with the proper technique. So it's going to require practice, a lot of repetition, and you're going to have to anticipate that you may even see a decrement in your performance and work through that. Frequently what we'll see is someone will have a correction made by a pro and they'll go out and start to play and they find, well, I'm playing worse than I was before, and they'll stop with the newly learned skill, the proper technique, and they'll rely back on the old habit that really just doesn't work as well. So there's going to be a little bit of a battle there, but if you stick with it, you should come out way ahead in terms of execution.
I think for those listeners who follow ball golf may know that Tiger Woods went through some new swing training this year, and he experienced sort of the same thing where he was having more difficulty with his drives early on in the season, and now he seems to be coming on strong again with his new swing.
Great example. That's exactly what we're talking about here. And another example of how this works is the old trick where you ask your competitor, in your backhand, do you inhale or do you exhale? And what this does, they start thinking about their execution. So rather than relying on their automatic response, they drop back to that procedural stage, and it's going to hurt their performance. So that trick does work, and there's actually a scientific explanation for why it does work.
As usual, you've given us a lot to think about. Can you quickly summarize the important points we need to think about for improving our practice?
Okay, well, first of all, you do need to practice. Going back to your Tiger Woods example, one of my favorite quotes from Tiger is, all the trophies and all the championships in the world don't change the fact that today I have to practice. So you can figure if Tiger Woods has to practice, you need to practice too. be sure that you're practicing the proper technique. So check with your local pro, ensure that your execution is correct. Second of all, you need to plan what you want to accomplish for each practice session. Set some goals for the outcome of each practice, and then look at the process that you need to follow to accomplish those goals. Keep a record of your practice performance. That's very important for providing feedback in terms of what went well and what needs more work, and this will help you plan your future practices. And practice like you play. Focus, really concentrate, and shoot your best shot each time that you take a practice stroke. Use your shot routine during practice. Also, practice under a variety of conditions. And if you do that, you'll probably find that your practice is much more effective. So remember, it's not just practice that makes perfect, it's perfect practice that makes perfect. The implications for practice for a new golfer are a little bit different than some of these guidelines that we've been giving for people that have been playing for a while. New golfers are in that verbal stage, that first stage where they're talking themselves through the skill, and it's going to require a different type of practice. These individuals want to practice what we call consistent practice. So rather than playing under different conditions, using different lies and so forth, they need to practice consistently until they automate each skill. So for putting, a new golfer would benefit much more than an experienced golfer from just standing 10 feet from the basket, 20 feet from the basket, and throwing putt after putt after putt. For a new golfer, that's going to help automate that execution of the putting stroke. For experienced golfer, they need to focus more on the generalizability of their strokes from different lies and under different conditions. So new golfers need to practice consistently until each skill is automated, whereas skilled golfers should practice under a variety of conditions.
Dr. Betsy, thank you as always for your time and expertise.
You're welcome, Brian. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Dr. Betsy Schoenfeld is a sports psychologist on faculty at Western Kentucky University in Bowling Green, Kentucky. She spoke to us from her office there. And you're listening to PDGA Radio News.
Since 1979, Discraft has designed and manufactured tournament-quality flying discs for all disc sports. Our disc golf line is second to none. From beginners to world champion pros, disc golfers everywhere rely on the quality, consistency, and durability of every Discraft Pro Golf disc. Discraft, the world leader in disc sports.
Try the new Venom Maximum Distance Driver and the Drone in overstable mid-range in the new Pro D Plastic for superior grip even when wet from Discraft. If you're the kind of player who says things like, bring on the pain, well, have we got an event for you. With courses like the Woodshed and the Whippin' Post, it's got to be the West Virginia Open in Paw Paw, West Virginia. Mark Susie is the marketing director.
The West Virginia Open started in 1994, pretty much the culmination of Spencer's dream to build a course out in Paw Paw, West Virginia. The first winners of that event, I believe we had about 40 people. Mike Moser won in 1994 in Open. Spencer Thurman took his own tournament, won in Masters. And Mary Newland, who was, I believe at that time, the only woman that showed up for this tournament, won Open Women. Defending champs this year are Tyler Horn, who won that by about six strokes last year over, I think it was Craig Gangloff who was following at his heel. Masters was Jim Myers, no spin. Women was Des Redding, our current women's world champion. She'll be back defending this title. Paw Paw and the Woodshed are about 3.5 miles worth of golf if you line the holes up end to end. That'll tell you what the distance is. There's within the two courses, there is at least 70 to 85 foot elevation changes within the terrain. One course called the Woodshed is 9 holes in a field and 9 holes in the woods. They are some of the hardest wood holes that you had ever experienced. The second course, the Whippin' Post, is about the same with 9 holes out in the field and 9 tight wood holes with major elevation changes and scenic picturesque shots with ponds at the end of your shots, pins on the other side of ponds. The West Virginia Open is a unique event because it is a one-of-a-kind event. It's one of the rare events where everybody comes to and no one leaves. very few people leave the premises for the entire weekend. So everybody you're playing with is camping out around you. Once you come, you'll be coming back, and we filled the field this year, so it's going to be a big party.
Mark Soucy is marketing director for this weekend's West Virginia Open in Pawpaw, West Virginia. He spoke to us from his home in Frederick, Maryland.
Discovering the World has long been the leader in mail order disc services, with the largest selection of professional and recreational flying disc products, plus PDGA merchandise. Discovering the World is a great place to find the disc you need for the sport you love. Online orders ship within 24 hours, and the new retail location is open 7 days a week to handle all your flying disc needs. Call 714-522-2202 or visit dtworld.com. Discovering the World.
Labor Day weekend this weekend. That means get out and play a PDGA tournament. In Cottage Grove, Minnesota, it's the Days of Disc. And in Finland, it's the Helsinki Open. North Carolina hosting the Hickory Classic. And in Lewiston, New York, the Lewiston Labor Day Luau. If you're going to play one fall tournament in Michigan, make it the finals, the state finals. That's in Ludington and Flip City, one of the best courses anywhere. In Holly Springs, Mississippi, the McDonald's Southern National Pro Championship. Call ahead. Lock the flambeau. Say hi to the Cousins folks and play in the Northwoods Open. Or head to Round Rock, Texas. Say hi to Rappin' John Hauk and play in the Outlaw Singles Shootout. Plus, Leadville, Colorado, hosting the Pawnee Gulch Classic. In Tulsa, it's the Twisted Flyer Charity Tour. The Iowa State Championships in Madrid. AMS on Saturday. Pros in Advance on Sunday. Germany, Japan, Wisconsin, Indiana. Full list, PDGA.com.
At GottaGo, GottaThrow.com, you'll find the largest selections at the lowest prices. They carry all your favorite brands of golf discs, bags, and baskets. No matter what you're looking for, you'll find the largest selection of everything for disc golf. And they can do custom discs and mini markers for your club or help promote your next tournament. Check out the online pro shop at GottaGoGottaThrow.com. The leader in high-performance disc golf equipment and merchandise is GottaGo, GottaThrow.
And finally, the 2005 PDGA elections wrapped up about a week ago. We've got results for you now. And before we dive into those, I want to note that the rate of return on voting was 21.6%. That means one in five current members took the time to vote, even though we did it online this year. So part of the reason I can see for the low return rate is the fact that on the PDGA Board of Directors, everybody was running unopposed. Although there were some write-in votes cast, your commissioner once again will be Teo Posey for the next 2 years. These terms for the board will begin September 1st this year and expire August 31st, 2007. So Teo Posey is back. Robert Decker will be your financial director. Pete May is back on publicity. John Lixit for regional director. And your oversight director is Kirk Yeo. His term will expire August 31st, 2006 by special arrangement. Now let's run down the long list of your PDGA state and provincial coordinator election winners. In Alabama, it's Andy Isbell. For Alberta, Don Annette. In Arkansas, a four-way tie. A winner will be determined later. Scott Reek will serve as the coordinator for the Armed Forces Overseas. The California North representative for the PDGA is Mike Magilla Ruzica. In Colorado, John Bird over Kevin Metzler. In Delaware, it is Charles Banning. Sue Ann Beam for Georgia will be serving. And Greg Buchelman will be our coordinator for Idaho. He beat out Charles Parsons by one single vote. Jason Samuels is back serving for Indiana. In Kansas, it's Chris Smith. Louisiana, Will Timmons. Manitoba, Brian Wolowicz. In Minnesota, it's Tom Hams. In Missouri, Rick Rothstein. Nebraska, Anita Jackson. New Hampshire, Richard Riley. New Mexico, John Hahn. It's Alan Beaver for North Carolina. Ben Bott returns for Ohio. In Ontario, it's Don Lane. Nick Kite serving for Pennsylvania. In Quebec, it's Jeff Meldrum. In Saskatchewan, Murray Gordon. South Dakota, Douglas King will be serving. Gary Duke for Texas. Kurt Wagoner for Vermont. In Washington, Eric Edgerton. And Terry Miller returns as the state coordinator for Wisconsin. Now, there were also a couple of referendum questions in this election. The first one was, if world championship events were shortened by 1 to 2 days and 2 to 3 rounds, would this significantly increase the chances of your attending and participating in a PDGA World Championships? 53.8% of the responses said, yes, that would help me get there. 46.2% said, nah, not really. Shortening would not help me to get to the Worlds. The second question was, what do you think of the current dress code for national tour events and major events? 41.8% said it's great as is, leave it alone. 26.2% said the dress code is too restrictive. 17.2% of the respondents said, dress code is fine for pros, but it should be relaxed for the AMs. And 14.8% said it is not restrictive enough. So a very wide array of opinions on the dress code. No surprise there. It's been an ongoing debate for many, many years. For the PDGA, I'm Brian Sullivan. That is the show for this week. Thanks to our sponsors. They are GottaGo, GottaThrow.com, also Discraft, and No Obstacles Disc Golf, Innova Champion Discs, and Discovering the World. And until next week, I hope you will get out there. Huck some plastic. Leave the course cleaner than you found it, unless a hurricane just ripped through your course, in which case we'll give you a couple of weeks to deal with that and keep them in the fairways.